Masters have been coming from time to time to guide the child humanity back to their home. When they come, they ask us whatever all around them, they must look into the deep down into the things and find out what is real and what is unreal. What is lasting and what is temporary. Vedas tell us, O Lord, lead us from the unreal to the real, from darkness to light. Now as you see, the world is changing all around us. And men who are with us, some are coming, born, some are being put underground and are cremated. Child is small, grows up in years, and ultimately he has to leave the world. So this is what all masters have been telling us, to discriminate. There is a proverbial word, it is said that when milk and water is mixed up, that bird has a special quality. He puts his beak into the water and water is separate from the milk. So, we as we are also discriminatory birds. Master has compared us to the discriminatory bird. When you come to the world, you look into the things and see what is real and what is unreal, what is lasting and what is temporary. We have seen all around us, we find like that, everything is changing. And now directly concerned we are with our own man body. It is also changing. We are someday small, then high, then young, then old. Some pass away quite young, some during the poverty time, some at the age of the old thing. So this is not lasting. So masters draw attention to this. You are a discriminatory bird. Discriminate between what is permanent and what is temporary. Now let us go. Look to our own selves. We are conscious entities, drops of the ocean of all consciousness, which is permanent, eternal. So as God is eternal, permanent, so we are also eternal. God is spirit, we are spirit and man. We cannot do less than that. But the body that we have been given, this is changing. Body is made up of matter. Matter is further made up of elements. And they are changing. So matter is changing every moment of life. And all the world around us is also changing. At the same speed as our body is changing. So the body that we are carrying, all masters have said, you, in our court, everybody. Guru Arjan tells us, well, look, what is the real thing and what is the lasting thing and what is changing. So when you find something lasting that requires to be adhered to, and what is changing, naturally you simply make the best use of the things that are given to you. So man body is given to you as a golden opportunity, though very short time, It is not lasting, it is not our home. But in this temporary home that we have been given by God, we can do something very important. And that is that in man body only we can know God. We can solve the mystery of life, what it is that carries this body. This body works on account of us. When we leave the body, who cares for the body? After some time it is put underground or cremated according to the custom prevailing. But at the same time I tell you, it is a golden opportunity. Masters did come, they solved the mystery of life, and those who met them, they also were able to solve the mystery of life. What they found? That man body is the highest in all creation, highest in the rung of creation. The work that we can do in man body cannot be done in any other body, in the animals, birds, reptiles. And what is that? We, as I told you, they tell us you are discriminatory birds. Discriminate which is right and wrong, what is lasting, what is temporary, what is light and what is darkness. Lead me from the darkness to light, as the Vedas say. Lead me from the unreal to the real. Also Christ says, let the light in you be not darkness. They are drawing our attention to our own self, who we are, what we are. Are we the man body? You say no. We have the man body. This is the first companion that we have when we enter into the world. But when we leave, this first companion also does not go along with us. What to speak of all other things which have come in our contact through the man body? So that is why Christ said, lay thy treasures in heaven. You see, where no moth will eat. So this life is temporary. This physical body given, that is also temporary. But golden opportunity, of course. The world around us is also temporary, changing all the time. Our soul are under the control of mind. Mind is under the control of the outgoing faculties. And outgoing faculties are driven like anything by the enjoyments outside. It is we who give strength to the mind, to the outgoing faculties. But the whole thing is topsy-turvy. Enjoyments drag the outgoing faculties like anything. Good scenery, good beauty, music, outside, other things. And outgoing enjoyments drag our outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties drawing the mind, dragging the mind, and mind is dragging the soul. Just take the case of a factory run by powerhouse. There are some certain staffs connected with the different departments of the factory. Whichever department you would like to close down, you take out the staff connected with that. If you want to close down the whole factory, you will take out the main staff. So the factory of the man body is also run by us. We have also got different departments of the sight, eyes, of the ear, hearing, outside, of the smell, of the taste, after attaching. So many departments are working on account of us because we give strength to them. They themselves, they are not possible. It is not possible for them to enjoy outside things. So Master tell us, man body is a golden opportunity that you have got. Make the best use of it. In what connection? The outward connections, parents, brothers, sisters, wives, husbands, they come up as a reaction of the past. We are bound, like all other bodies which they have. But we are free without certain limits. The railway line is laid down, and the train will run over that. Further, you are free to lay down line anywhere you like. So in man body, we are bound to a certain extent and free within certain limits. This freedom is not had in any other body of creation. Animals cannot do it, birds cannot do it. So here, Master comes and look at us, discriminate between right and wrong, lasting and changing. What is lasting, adhere to that, and what is changing, make the best use of that. The whole angle of it is the change. So what does it tell us? Man body is the highest in all creation, that's right. We are drops of the ocean of all consciousness, and God is all wisdom, all jaya, and all lasting, eternal. Now that reflection we have got, we are of the same essence as that of God. That reflection is within us. You see so many men carrying on your shoulder to the cremation places, to the burial place, but you never think of that you have to die. Although you see with your eyes, with your hands, you're carrying somebody, like the very body that you are carrying. Because the reflection of that eternity within you. God is all wisdom. Take the case of any small child. When he talks like anybody who talks, he says, I know the best of all. Nobody else knows so much as I know. It's a reflection of that. So God is all jaya. All happiness. That reflection is within us. We all want jaya, okay? Happiness. Why we have money? To be happy. Why we have got families? To be happy, ultimate goal. Why we want to have houses? To be happy. Why we want carriages and cars and other things? Just to have facilities and jaya. So in outward things, with all that, we are not happy. This is a point to be shifted. You say we do enjoy, we do feel happiness at times. True, it is. And at other times you are not happy. Now just go into it. Why you feel happiness sometimes and why you feel unhappiness. Take the example of a dog to understand the thing. He is eating a bone. You know, bone has no taste. But he eats it up, his own blood takes and he drinks that and enjoys it. So in eating bone there is no happiness. His own blood is eating. Similar, jaya is within us. When that attention is riveted at a certain place, we feel happy. Maybe anything. You are just going by your friend, who you love, you are happy. You enjoy, you feel happiness. Similar when you, other things give you happiness only so long as you are attached with them. And those things to whom you are attached, if they are temporary, transitory, then what to do? Naturally, when you withdraw from them, you feel unhappiness. So Master's advice, contact yourself with someone who is ever permanent. And who is that? God alone. So it is God who made all this creation. It's well planned, you see, well controlled all around. There are planets who have gone around their orbits, have been seen only once in 5,000 years. Just see, intellect baffles how great the creation is. And they never strike against one another. Everybody going on their own orbit. How well controlled it is. Sun rises at the appointed hour. No minute less and no more. How well planned it is. As our train are running in time, sometimes they are late, but this is never late. So it is well planned, well controlled. So they say, hey, just you want to be permanently happy, contact with God, who is everlasting, ever eternal. And where is that God? How can you find Him? How can you contact with Him? Disappointment. So God made all this creation and is reverberating in all creation. He's not outer. He's immanent in every form. So, directly concerned with our own man body, in this man body also He is with us. Man is a wonderful house we live in. It has got so many apertures of eyes, two nostrils, two ears, mouth and two underneath. With all that, the doors are open. We cannot run away out of it. So body works so long as we are in the body. And our bodies are controlled. We are controlled in the body. Some higher power, which does not let us go out at our will. And that is the God in Krishna's power. So there are two aspects of God. One is God absolute, which nobody has seen. God, nobody has seen God at any time. When that God power absolute came into being, He wanted one and wished to be many. That power came into expression. That power is called Nama. That power is called world. He is worldless. When it came into being, it was called world. In the beginning was the world. World was with God and world was God. And whole creation came up after that. So that God into expression power is the maker of all this creation. And if you come in contact with the God into expression power, that will lead us where? To the absolute God, from where it emanated. So God, as I told you, directly in the man body. We are in the man body. And that controlling power, which is God into expression power, is also in this man body, controlling us. So masters say, we have seen God. What God? God into expression power. When He said, I am one and wish to be many, there was vibration. Vibration results in two things, light and sound. God is light and God is nada. God is music of the spheres. God is ringing, what you say? Ringing music. Ringing light, you can say. So that power is controlling you within the body. You come in contact with that, that will never die, and you will never die. And that will be able to lead you to the place where from that emanated. So take the example of a ray of the sun. Sun has got rays. If you know how to ride on the ray will lead you to the sun, from it is emanated. So nama, word, or kalma, you see, shabda, is the direct way back to God, that is natural way. And that resides in your heart. God resides in every heart. And you also reside in the same man body. Both are in the same body, but we are seeking amiss. We seek him in outside things, you see. So Master tell us, O man, be a discriminatory word, discriminate between the right and the wrong, permanent and the changing. That permanent is within you also. But you are identified with the mind so and so, and body so and so, and outward going faculty so and so, that you have forgotten yourself. So masters tell us, rishis of the old and all who came after that, in their own times, O man, know thyself. Greek philosophers have to say the same thing in their own language, gnothi chaton. Old Latin have to say the same thing, gnothi tiptum, in their own language. And all others, you see, Guru Nanak say, unless you analyze yourself to know yourself, you cannot be out of delusion. You know how grand delusion it is. Our souls are in the control of mind, mind under the control of outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties drawn like anything by the outer enjoyments. We are identified so much so with the body which is changing every moment of life that we have forgotten also. Although this machine works on account of us. So Master tell us, please know thyself. How to know ourselves comes next. Generally we know at the level of feelings, our drawing influences. They are both subject to error. Seeing is above all. So I can put off my coat, this is my coat, this is my watch, I can put it off. I put it off my boots. But we say it is my mind, my intellect, my body, my outgoing fiber. Can you put off? So masters tell us how to rise above these outgoing faculties and body. They not only tell us how, but give us a demonstration of that. So the outward expression of the soul is attention, called attention. So attention is withdrawn when it is withdrawn from all outside and also from the body below. The soul seated at the back of the eyes. When we come to there, we succeed in coming over there, we find this fact is being run by us. We are the master of our, this factory of the body. Guru Ramdas tells us, praise that one place of God, give me such a guru, such a master, who will enable me to control all my outgoing faculties. Who is a touchstone, you see, there is a certain proverbial, some stone when it is touched with all metals, they turn the metals into gold. He prays, let us meet with such a master who is like that, by touching which man becomes gold. Then he said, my prayer was succeeded and God gave me a guru, who only not made me gold, but made me that very stone itself. Now those who come in contact with me, they are all turned into gold. Then he said, what did you get? He say, I am the master of my man body now, of the factory of the man body. I have given 10 servants to work under me. And who are they? Eye and sight, ear and audition, tongue and taste, you see, nose and smell, and body and attachment. So
He says, now 10 servants at my beck and call. Now they don't drag me. I have come above them. I have risen above them. Now they are at my beck and call. This is the first success. A man who sits at the feet of the master and follows what he says accurately. He gives you demonstration of that the very first day. Maybe little or more. How to rise above body. So all these five Descartes, you know, lust, anger, taste, and all that they always assail, attack you. Man concerned attacks us from these outgoing faculties. Lust attacks us through the eyes. Anger attacks us through the ears. When you're angry with somebody, the word, the more the other, the more boost you get, the more angry, you see. So they are centers, you see. Attachment grows more when you embrace somebody. So these centers you rise above. This is the first demonstration given by a saint to rise above body consciousness. We are at the back. All these outgoing faculties remain below. Eyes, ears, everything. And there they give you something more tasteful, more blissful, more enchanting. The bliss of which when the mind gets, he forgets all outer enjoyments. So man-body, I told you, God also resides in this very man-body, and we also reside in this one. Master says, yes, we have seen God. Guru Nanak went to Paksha. There, Qazi Rukundin, a saint over there, he asked Guru Nanak, have you seen the house of God? He said, yes, I have seen. Then he demonstrated this man. There are bastions, 1, 2, 3, 3, 6, and 12 bastions. There are 52 minarets, 32 teeth, and 20 nails. There are two windows in the house. These are the windows. Above that, God calls us, come back, my children, to your homes. So he describes this very man's body. The man's body is the temple of God. Can we see also? Yes. He says, you can see this very man's body, which you now consider only a what is store of filth, arranged blood or intestines, it is the man body, the true temple of God in which you reside and we reside too. God resides where? God doesn't, all scriptures tell us, God does not reside in temples made with stones. I gave a talk that in London once, last tour, one bishop rose up. You have thrown atomum on all our Christianity. What he means? Outer churches, temples, mass are made by man, out of the model of man body. And this man body is made by whom? By the hands of God in the womb of the mother. So God resides in the house which he has made. And that is this in which we live. So with the grace of a master whose inner eye is open to see that it is the temple of God, we ask him, how do you say it is temple of God? We do not say. This is but natural question arises. He says, God is within you. This man body is the true temple of God. Only reason is why you can't see is that mind stands between you and God in the body. You know, as I told you just submitted before, that our souls are under the control of mind. Mind is under the control of outgoing faculties. Outgoing faculties are drawn like dragged anything by the outer enjoyment. So we are identified with this man body and outer thing so much that we have forgotten also.
Good evening and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording that was just played was the first 30 minutes of the talk titled What is Real? This talk was given by Master on 16th September 1972 at Liverpool, England. And our reader this evening is David Halliburton. Hello, David.
Hi, Pradeep.
Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to be reading for you one of Master Kripal Singh's satsang talks, which was originally given in Hindi at Salan Ashram. It's called Search for Truth, and it was published in the March 1969 issue of Satsang Desh. We are neither much concerned with races and religions, nor with any social order. The problem before us is that of God, or of God-men who found God. We are all worshippers of the reality that is one and pervading everywhere. Lovers may be myriads, but the beloved is one. The creeds and faiths may be different, but the objective is one. We are all seekers after God, God of the entire universe, and God of the learned and the unlettered. He has nothing to do with Hinduism, Sikhism, Islam, or Christianity. He is one and only one, and we are his worshipers. Devotion to the Master is a sine qua non, or an absolutely essential requirement, on the path Godward. Christ said, I am the vine, and thou art the branches. So long as the branches are embedded in the vine, they are bound to bring forth fruit. It means that the seekers after God must strike their roots in the God-man. Without devotion to the Master, one cannot achieve anything. Guru precedes God. We have not seen God, nor can we see him. He is at a level much higher than that on which we are. He is the subtlest of the subtle, and beyond comprehension. So long as we do not rise to his level and become as subtle as he is, we cannot see him. Each one has his own range of vision. Even the atmosphere around us is full of tiny living creatures called microbes, but we cannot see them without the help of a microscope. It is the microscope that changes the level of our vision, and we begin to see them magnified. The first thing for man is to rise to God's level. In the God-man, God is fully manifested. If we become Guru-man, we rise to the level of God and begin to see the power and spirit of God in him. We can neither visualize God nor contemplate him, as he is formless. In the Guru, he assumes a form. Devotion to Guru, then, is devotion to God in him. Guru, in fact, is not the body, but the God power working in and through that body. He is the human pole on which the divine power works and carries on the work of regeneration. This power neither takes birth nor does it die. It eternally remains the same. God cannot speak unless he assumes a human form. Without a human form, how can the formless express himself? Guru is thus the human pole of God, and works like a live switch with all the power of the powerhouse behind it. Man is to be the teacher of man. Even to know God, one has to seek the help of a God teacher. In God teacher, or the guru, the power of God surges in fullness. His eyes are the overflowing cups of divinity. In his presence, one loses all thoughts of himself, of the world here, or of the world hereafter. From the stage begins Gur Bhakti, or worshipful devotion to the master. From now on, the disciple lives in and for the master. Saint Paul, when he rose into higher consciousness of Christ power, said, "It is I. No, not now I, but Christ lives in me." Khawaja Hafiz, in his own way, speaks of the same thing. "My whole being is so permeated with the love of the Lord that I have now no thought of the self, and my old self has completely disappeared. O Lord, I am now thine, and thou art mine. I am the body, and thou art my very soul. Henceforth, no one can say that we are apart from each other." Elsewhere, this Sufi mystic has said, "Since I am united with my beloved, I have lost all sense of fear. One who has sunk deep into the water of life can have no fear of death." The Apostle Paul, when one with Christ, said, "I can now fearlessly walk through the shadow of the valley of death, for thou art with me." It is a question of grafting. Grafting a branch of one tree into another tree. What happens? The fruit of the second tree, while retaining the shape and color of its own, acquires the taste and flavor of the other. This is exactly what happens when the guru power, or life impulse of the guru, works upon the disciple. While remaining as before, the disciple is now no longer his previous self, for he has been bought with a ransom. To be one with God, one has first to be one with the God-man. This is the easiest way to reach God. It is the Atman in us that has to realize Param Atman. A part is always in search of the whole. We are so constituted that we cannot rest until we rest in Him. The flame of a lighted candle, even if turned upside down, would still rise upwards. A clod of earth, if thrown upward, is sure to come down. This is the law of gravitation. Everything tends to move towards its source. A conscious entity cannot but seek the ocean of all consciousness. So the search for God is something natural in man. Why? Because we are in search of peace and happiness. But unfortunately, our search is in a wrong direction. We try to seek happiness in the world around us. And, strange enough, whatever little pleasure we get because of mental concentration, we call it happiness. It is, however, a misnomer to call sense pleasures as happiness. When the reality dawns in us, then we realize our mistake. The real happiness lies in us. It is born of love. Love of the self in us and love of the over-self, which also is in us. God is the soul of our soul. Soul is of the same essence as God. There is thus an innate similarity between the two. But for want of real knowledge and lack of competent teachers, we do not understand the exact position. Like a butterfly, we flit from flower to flower in search of honey, or like a musk deer, go in search of musk from place to place. Little do we know that the honey and the musk lie at the very center of our being within us. A child takes delight on a playground, while an intellectual person revels in his intellect. On the other hand, a young man seeks pleasure in his family. This is how happiness travels from one place to another, but it defies all our attempts to arrive at it. When one gets tired, one tries to search for it elsewhere. This is the beginning of wisdom. From without, he turns inwards. God, who is the knower of all hearts, makes some provision for the aspirant. He leads the seeker after truth to someone who has realized truth in himself and is competent to help us truthward. We have before us a psalm from Guru Ram Das. Let us see what he has to say. I am smitten by the arrow of God's love. It is a beautiful way of describing one's love for the Lord. Once this love enters into the heart, it gets deeper and deeper with time. It is something quite different from the love for worldly things. Guru Ram Das in this psalm is giving us a pen picture of his own mind. He had an intense love for God, and it worked like an obsession in him. He now goes on to explain what it meant to him. I am feeling restless for the sight of God, as restless as a thirsty man in need of water. In this couplet, an attempt has been made to describe the nature of longing in him. The great teacher wants to see God face to face. He likens his condition to a person dying for want of water. You can well imagine what a painful state this is. Lovers always pine and wither away in their love for their beloved. God is love. Our soul, which is of the essence of God, is also dyed in the color of love. It is but natural with man to be in love with one thing or another. As at present, we are in love with our body and bodily connections, family and children, friends and relations, wealth and possessions. But all these things, you will realize, are of an impermanent nature. Again, they are changing from moment to moment. And ultimately, they do not abide with us forever. Either we are obliged to leave them, or they leave us in course of time. This being the case, we cannot derive permanent pleasure from them. It is just a transitory affair. Guru Arjan tells us in this context, we are in love with all that is visible. O Lord, how can we love Thee, the Eternal One? Let me say that this is not enough. It is a kind of attachment. We are momentarily carried away by the glitter and glamour of worldly things. We see things superficially. We do not realize that they would not remain with us for any length of time. The pleasures of the world come and go, like pictures on the screen. How can we have happiness with passing shadows? Real happiness is a state of the mind. The saints therefore emphasize, if ye are in search of real happiness, take refuge at the feet of the Lord. The power of the Lord is all-pervading and all-permeating. The saints are worshipers of the Supreme Being alone. There is no God but God. They tell us to be worshipers of the one God. They come into the world to connect us with God. Their mission is not to establish personal connections with themselves. They are the messiahs or the messengers of God. They bring his message to us. They live in the will of God and have no will of their own. Kabir always prayed, "My wish is of no consequence. Whatever is from thee." We may take the writings of any saint. In each one, we find the praises of the Lord. They have nothing to say of themselves. Christ, speaking of himself, said, "I do nothing on my own. I do as my Father wills me to do." They have no sense of I-ness in them. The great teacher has a great anguish in his heart. The wearer knows where the shoe pinches. The seekers after God are ever in a state of crucifixion. Why? One has to rise above the cross of the body, the point of intersection between the physical and the astral worlds in man, the eye focus. The Beloved lies far above. How can we reach him? It is a question of inner struggle between the mind and the soul. The soul is keen to reach the Oversoul, or God. The soul is languishing in the love of the Lord. One wants either to go up to God or for God to come down to him. There is no third alternative. He wants to see the reality face to face and be absorbed in him. This is the way of love. Amir Khusro, a mystic poet, said, "O God, come unto me and dwell in the pupil of my eyes. Let thou see me and I see thee. Let our love play be between us alone." Kabir likewise says, "Come thou into the chamber of my eyes and rest a while there. I would hide thee with my eyelashes and try to win thee over." This is how the lovers talk. They are bubbling over with love of the Lord. This is the way to be one with God. Spirituality cannot be taught, but may be caught as an infection from one who has it in himself. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. It is just like splitting the milk with a pinch of curd. In the company of such a one, we begin to put on some of his color. A certain change is sure to be felt. The atmospheric effect cannot but affect us to a certain extent. The way to God lies through love. Love is the connecting link between the soul and the oversoul. Whatever practices and performances that we do are the means for igniting the flame of love in us. But unfortunately, we engage in them just as a matter of routine on the physical level, like gymnastics. And these do not bring about an inner change. As such, they are not of much value to us. It is therefore said, one may, for hundreds of years, perform practices and penances, and yet be far removed from God. One cannot win God without lighting the flame of love in him. We have to fan the fire of love in us. Without love, we cannot reach God, for he is love. In the fire of love, nothing survives but the beloved. In the Quran, it is said, love is a forest fire that consumes everything but the object of love. Again, love is likened to an eagle, seeing which all the tiny birds fly away to save themselves. Who can stand this terrible ordeal? None but one who has ignited the fire. Guru Gobind Singh, the 10th guru in succession to Nanak, has rightly said, listen ye all with attention. Verily, I tell ye that it is through love that one reaches unto God. Guru Ram Dass, having developed the fire of love in him for the Lord, is now feeling restless, like a thirsty person for water. He then goes on to explain, God alone knows the condition of my mind and the great anguish in me. You would please realize that it is only the beloved who can understand the excruciating pain in the heart of the lover. God is the knower of all hearts, and he can know best who is pining for him. It is only one who has passed through this stage who can visualize what it is. I may tell you of the condition of my mind in the year 1911 or 1912. In those days, I had a great inner urge for God. It may be due partly to my past karmas and partly to the present development. While sitting in the office, tears would involuntarily flow from my eyes and spoil the papers before me. I wondered what it could be. In those days, I was under orders of transfer, and my colleagues and home folk thought that I had taken to heart my transfer orders. What could they know of the real state of my mind? The mystery of life is the greatest mystery in life. Once this question crops up, one cannot ignore it, however best one may try to do so. It keeps on revolving again and again and presents itself in so many different ways. I had an opportunity to sit beside a dying person. That had a tremendous effect on me. With the purity of life, I had also developed the faculty to read the future. All these came to me in a natural way, but with all these, I could not solve the enigma of life. The sight of the dying one before my very eyes quickened the intensity of my heart. I could feel that there was something which was slipping out of the person, but I could not make out what it was. I had yet no inkling of the life impulse. While it was still surging in me, it was ebbing out in the other. The lady on the deathbed called her friends and relations to meet them before leaving them for good. And, in an instant thereafter, she closed her eyes, never to open again. This is how she passed away in my very presence, and I felt bewildered. I was flabbergasted to see the dead body before me. The life in her had gone out. But I still felt that it was working in me. I followed the bier to the cremation ground along with others, while on the way my eyes inquiringly looked at the bier, but could not make out anything. Even the learned and the wise do not know how to solve this mystery. On reaching the cremation ground, I saw the dead body of an old man being laid on the funeral pyre. Alongside that pyre, we set up another pyre for the body of the young lady that we had carried on our shoulders. The contrast between the two scenes, the young and the old, deepened the anguish in my heart. Neither the one nor the other could escape the clutches of death. Both were lying lifeless before me. I wanted to know what life was. I tried to find the answer to my problem in the books. The whole night I would go on reading, but the books did not provide me with any solution. All that I could gather from them were veiled references here and there. At some places I could get tall and loud professions from the sayings of Mahatmas, as recorded in those books, advising one to do this or that. The books even would tell that it was a question of death in life. But how it could be done was the problem. For this, there was no answer in the books. Bookish knowledge cannot give that which one can get from practical experience. It is a question of self-analysis. A real master can give you some experience of the way out. I came to understand the great mystery in its practical aspect only when I came to the lotus feet of my master, Hazur Baba Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj. So, all things work their way and shape themselves when there is an intense longing for something. I alone knew as to why I was shedding tears in those days. How could others know of it? I'll stop there. My time is almost out. I've been reading from a talk called Search for Truth. And it was printed in the March 1969 issue of Sat Sandesh. Thank you, Master, for this opportunity to sit together in your name.
Thank you, David, for such an absorbing reading. We had 58 people in attendance today. Thank you for joining the satsang. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So thank you, Harya, affording this opportunity of snatching away your time from your busy hours to just have a patient hearing what I have come to know. So I thank you all for all that.